Good evening, Christian Esguerra, and welcome to this episode of After the Fact, where we get to see things more clearly, where we get a better sense of the truth. So let's begin by dissecting the news. Earlier today, the Philippines reached another grim milestone. 22,450 new COVID-19 cases, the country's highest single-day tally since the pandemic began last year. As reported, hospitals are also overwhelmed, especially in Metro Manila, despite what the official bed occupancy rates tell us. But in the meantime, the Philippines, starting today, has lifted its travel ban on 10 countries where the Delta variant is also prevalent. By Wednesday, September 8, Metro Manila will also shift to a general community quarantine and will experiment on granular lockdowns. This means only streets, villages, or buildings will be locked down, not entire regions or provinces. Tonight, we'll talk about the wisdom, the logic of these policy adjustments when cases continue to increase and are projected to rise even further. Now, be part of our discussion. Send us your questions and comments on our YouTube live chat or tweet us using the hashtag ANCAfterTheFact. Joining us tonight is a Health Undersecretary Leopoldo Vega. He's also the Philippines' treatment czar. Also with us is Dr. Tony Lechon. He is a former advisor to the country's pandemic task force. Good evening, gentlemen. Good evening, doctors. And thank you for joining us on the program.
Thank you, Christian, for inviting us. Good evening, Tony.
Good evening, Christian. Good evening, Yusek Bong. Good evening, everyone.
Well, apparently, we need to talk about not so good news for tonight. We recorded the highest single day tally for today, more than 22,000 cases. But first, I'd like to ask Undersecretary Vega, what's the logic behind that? Because a lot of people are asking about the timing of the lifting of the travel ban, which is today, starting today, and also the shift to a GCQ in Metro Manila, when in fact we're seeing so many cases, in fact, the highest single day tally today.
Yeah, right, Christian. If you can, if you notice in the past few weeks, we've been getting a big number of new cases. And that's we're averaging at least in Metro Manila alone, 5,000 per day. And definitely the strategy that we did before was, even before in the first wave, was a zero COVID kind of strategy wherein we tried to make sure that we had to the international airports will be properly be at least guarded in terms of the returning passengers. And definitely also we tried as much to do the citywide or the province-wide ECQ. And if you noticed along these strategies, we were not able to control the spread of the COVID-19 virus. In fact, even with the first and second waves, we did have a number of ECQs, and it was almost rhythmic, wherein we after 2 weeks and new cases would go down, then definitely we would open up again the economy. This cyclical kind of thing should, with the IATF thinks that there has to be a better strategy towards this. And this is now the granular lockdown, which is really more of a focused or a targeted kind of lockdown compared to a citywide or a province-wide lockdown, wherein it is not really economically or socioeconomically sustainable. And I think this is the reason why Metro Manila is being piloted to do this in terms of a granular lockdown. But this would be different with the granular lockdown we did before, because I think the implementation here should be stricter. And in other words, if you need to control the transmission of this Delta variant, you have to be very clear on the implementation and the execution of the granular lockdown along the LGUs, because this would mean an intensification of test, trace, and isolation. Okay. And I think that's the difference. That is the difference what we're seeing now.
That is the difference. But apparently, Undersecretary, you've heard that before, unfortunately. And it seemed like there's not much improvement. You talked about the strategy to break the cycle. That, of course, is a frustration of a lot of people. You don't want to go back to the same cycle. But in this case, don't you think this is counterintuitive that you have so many cases and then you're going to shift to this particular approach?
The strategy is really more of trying to the balance between you know, hammering down the COVID-19 and of course dancing with the virus, meaning you have to live with it, and opening up the economies there. And in a granular lockdown, it is made to believe that there would be different levels of risk for every other community. So in other words, if you are in a level one, you're a low risk, and a level four, you'll be a high risk, wherein there's a hard lockdown. So in other words, it's really a balance between opening up the economy and trying to control the transmission. We need to attain that certain balance so that we can move on with our direction of running our day-to-day activities. And of course, we're hoping that this COVID-19 really won't be out of the picture for the next several years, and we have to learn to live with it. I mean, if this is a pandemic, it should come as an endemic in any time soon.
Okay, of course, we understand the importance of this strategy, learning how to dance with the virus, especially as we try to inoculate more and more Filipinos. But I'd like to ask Dr. Tony Lechon, being a former advisor to the pandemic task force of the Duterte administration, let's talk about the timing of this shift. Is it wise to actually implement these new strategies at this time?
Well, basically about 80% of what Yusek Bongbeg said, I actually fully agree with him. And as you can see, the announcement came from the TI, Ramon Lopez, and you can see where the leadership is coming from. And I understand that with these severe lockdowns, the economic depression is, of course, getting worse day to day. My only concern, though I agree completely with Yusek Bongbeg, is the timing, because the cases right now are basically averaging at 20,000 per day. And what I was thinking, I really don't believe in lockdowns, really. So after being part of the group that crafted the quarantine classifications during my stint at the NTF, I think I would perhaps suggest first, of course, Yusek Bongbeg as a surgeon, to manage first the 22,000 cases to a manageable level. For example, during the July-August surge last year, if you remember, we had around 6,000, and then the president, the medical community actually asked for ECQ, but the president granted that MECQ, and there was really a manageable level around 2,000 until we reached, Christian, if you remember, Yusek Bong, around April with a Delta variant reached 15,000. So I was thinking that the granular lockdown would be good, let's say after, let's say 2 weeks, acute management of this case. In the States, you don't do the lockdown anymore. They do massive testings, and then they do contact tracing, and then isolation, and then rapid vaccination. My main concern with the granular lockdowns, though, it will not really hamper the economy, is that there's still a mobility. That's number one. There's high positivity rate. It is the highest at this point, at 28%. So if we don't control, let's say, the positivity rate by reduction of the cases, then this would actually end up in the hospital and increase the healthcare utilization, which is the highest at this point also at the national level and even at the NCR. So I think the timing is just, to me, is just a little off. Perhaps if they can manage, let's say, bringing down the cases to 22,000, just like the previous experience, let's say, going down, let's say, to 15, and then do the granular lockdown while the healthcare capacities are going up. I noticed that Secretary Vince Tison has been doing his homework, because I'm monitoring the testing. It's 75,000, 73,000. And if you will do this in the next few weeks, you decrease the positivity rate and then decrease the number of cases, and then okay, the hospital will not be overwhelmed.
Wait, Dr. Tony Lechon, in the meantime, if you have a question regarding the timing of the granular lockdowns, what do you suggest, aside from increased testing, to be able to bring down the positivity rate? Are you suggesting a return to ECQ or MECQ?
No, not ECQ, because that will need ayuda or economic relief.
So what are you suggesting in the meantime?
My suggestion, an extension of the MECQ for at least 2 weeks, and then reevaluate. Then, as Yusek Bong Vega said, intense intensification of the mitigation measures, the TTIQB, for the next 2 weeks. And then, of course, the LGU leadership and governance on this particular segment of the implementation of the granular lockdown.
Okay. Undersecretary Vega, how do you respond to those who are saying that the fact that we've registered the highest so far, 22,415 new cases, do these numbers suggest that the government has lost control of the pandemic response? What's your response to that?
Definitely not, Christian. I mean, the government is still under control, is making sure that the control is there. And as to Tony's reaction in terms of the timing, I do believe that the timing might be off, but I guess the main point that the government is considering right now is we really have to live with this virus. And the 22,000 that we're seeing, and we hope not, Tony, that this actually increases more. And we're looking at this from a high level of plateau, and hoping that in the next few weeks, it might decrease with the intensification and the granular lockdown. It's this uncertainty, however, that brings us to the fore, that if you are not going to do any kind of intervention, especially at this time that we have, we are going to proclaim NCR as GCQ, although it's heightened restrictions, we will not have a possibility really of decreasing this. So in other words, what I'm saying is that there has to be a very good intervention when you pronounce a GCQ and this timing. Meaning okay. to say that the MECQ that we had before is apparently looks like a heightened GCQ if you look at it in technical terms. So in other words, that's not really very far from an MECQ, but with the timing that it is going to be on September 8th, there has to be a counter intervention and a counter kind of making sure that the LGU really execute and implement the plan for a granular lockdown.
Okay, but in simple terms, Undersecretary Vega, ito lang yung parang mahirap ipaliwanag o ipaintindi sa marami. This is a very logical observation. In the past, we had fewer cases. Of course, when you say fewer, that's relative, no? So sobrang dami pa rin, but fewer than the cases that we recorded today. Yet we implemented ECQ and MECQ. Pero bakit ngayon na mas dumadami, bigla tayo mag-shift to a more quote-unquote relaxed quarantine restrictions at we lifted the travel ban? I mean, how do you make people understand that?
Yeah, because initially what we really wanted to do was a zero strategy for COVID. I mean, that's what we all... Globally, everybody was just trying to lock up the economy and even the borders to make sure that it's COVID zero. But this is not happening, and the virus keeps mutating. And definitely, even if you do drastic measures, as we've seen is in Australia, in Vietnam, COVID-19 will just mutate. And it means that if this virus keeps on mutating, we need to evolve. We need to evolve with our strategies in terms of making sure that we can live with this virus. We've been living with so many viruses on this planet. I mean, there's always a risk to the viruses, and we need to make sure that and understand that we need to grapple with the mutation of this virus, come up with a very good strategy for lessening the transmission, increase the vaccination, and live with it. I mean, we are surrounded by bacteria and viruses.
Yeah, that's so true. I think, Undersecretary, the basic difference is that this is a new virus. This is a new variant, Delta. And of course, we haven't vaccinated enough people, and we haven't done enough testing, as suggested by experts, including the Department of Health. Yet, we're talking about relaxing the rules. I think that's the crux of the issue.
Yeah, but the thing is, we have certain interventions towards it. And the one biggest hope that we have is the vaccines. I mean, if you are able to vaccinate as much as more than 500,000 per day and apparently hit the 70% immunity or herd immunity for the targeted population, that would be a bigger, you know, a big protection for the communities. In other words, the virus is there, but we do have vaccines that can actually make sure that we will be all protected in one way or the other.
Okay, Dr. Tony, how do you respond to that? The explanation that this is meant to allow us to somehow adjust and live with the virus. But given the situation that we have now, isn't that too early for that? And do you think that this decision is more economic than public health centered?
Well, the concept of Yusek Bombega, and perhaps this is being echoed right now by the IATF, is fine. But I think the environment is not quite ready yet for the GCQ or the easing out of a lockdown. I understand, because I also believe in living with the virus, and in some of my, you know, Viber chats, you know, particularly those businessmen friends of mine, that you have to prepare really yourself with the virus. You have to really dance with the virus. But one particular example that I'd like to mention is though it's really small in terms of the population, but we can have a replica per LGU of the Singapore experience. Prime Minister Lee prepared the environment very well with vaccinating the population around 80%. And then he ensured that the testings are free and the tracing infrastructures are ready. Now, they have only three particular programs, and I am monitoring the Singapore being the one of the role models in Asia. But the main concern is the testings in our country is actually not free. That's number one. The contact tracing infrastructure is not yet ready as well, as mentioned by Secretary Duque during the Senate hearing, in terms of the impact. And you cannot actually contact trace if you are not actually testing. And then the vaccination rate in Singapore is quite high, around 70 to 80%. So they have declared that they are going to open the economy and then live with the virus. Now, in our situation in the Philippines, I don't think we're ready at this point in time, given that our testings are not free, though it's increasing by the day. Our tracing, contact tracing is not yet you know, in full swing and not widespread as compared with other countries. But we must, of course, debate on that because of the NCR's bigger population than, let's say, the role model, which is Singapore. And our vaccination rate is definitely lower. It's around 50%, but we're getting there. But I think, again, you have to put the cart before the horse. I mean, that's an idiomatic expression. And of course, that will, of course, entail timing. But of course, perhaps Yusek Bombega will say there's no wrong time to do the right thing. And then you have to do it right now and then roll with the punches despite everything.
Okay. Undersecretary Vega, help us also understand this pronouncement coming from Secretary Roque. Once we start implementing the granular lockdowns, sabi niya, authorized persons outside of residences, yung of course, will be allowed to leave but won't be allowed to return. I mean, what's the sense in that? I mean, where will they stay?
Yeah, right. Christian, you know, when you try to implement even in a pilot setting, and I believe, as Tony was saying, if we can just pilot things similar to what Singapore is doing, pilot testing a granular lockdown is kind of hard. This is totally different from the granular lockdowns that we did before, because now there is a strict lockdown wherein people can't enter the vicinity if it's a level 4 kind of a risk. And if you are working and you left, then definitely the employer has to make sure that you have a place to stay and for the time being that you can't go home. So the implementation of this is where an execution is really the hardest of all, because I guess it would mean that you need to give food assistance and all assistance to the community that is in hard lockdown, whether it's going to be a street or barangay. And there has to be adequate barangay healthcare workers who will have to make the rounds, making sure that everybody there is not very sick, that they have to isolate at once, and they have to find out and actively do active tracing, especially okay. on this people in the lockdown.
Okay, so, but specific, sorry to cut you off, Undersecretary, but specific to this information coming from Malacañang, yung upwards din sila makakabalik pag umalis, and the employers would have to provide for their lodging for places where they could stay. But did the IATF factor in the situation of many of these employers? Were they consulted? We know that they're also hard up because of the economic situation. I mean, did the government also consider if they could afford providing such spaces for their employers for the time being?
Yeah, I think, Christian, this is strategy really is a collaboration between the DILG and the DTI, making sure that they are able to implement this. So I'm sure with the DTI, and they were able to talk to some of the employees. They should be talking to the employers in terms of lodging these upwards, no, who can't enter the homes once they are in lockdown. So there has to be preparations for this too.
Okay. What do you think, Dr. Lietchon, specific to this arrangement for the authorized persons outside of residences? And you can also perhaps respond to this, because you know that in the past, there were already experiences when it came to granular lockdowns. But according to Undersecretary, this time it will be very, very strict. But I mean, how optimistic are you that this can be implemented, especially in a situation where there's still mobility, right? I think that was a difference before. We implemented ECQ, but with greater mobility. I think both of you gentlemen would agree. That was a difference. No? Dr. Lechon.
Well, I think the upwards should be really discussed with the private sector, because in my discussion with Presidential Advisor Joey Concepcion, I mean, they're really having a difficult time really addressing all of these things. And perhaps I think that's one thing that the DTI and the DOH and the NTF should discuss with the private sector, because it would mean resources, Christian. That's number one. And then number two, that would also require, of course, checking it out, this upwards, and of course their living conditions, as well as the places where actually they would reside. Then perhaps the other question for me, for which I don't have any answer, is that what would be the threshold for the government to say that it is not successful, considering we have usually a window of 2 weeks and you have 22,000 right now. And the deepest concern, of course, Yusek Bombega is very aware of this, of the call of the healthcare worker. So my question, Christian, is ganito eh. Agree naman tayo with that, because we really try to balance it out. Eh. But just 3 days ago, nagre-reklamo ang healthcare workers, tapagod na. And then you have the healthcare utilization, mataas at the highest ever. No? Now, siguro ang gusto ko lang matanong is that ano ang magiging threshold for them to revert back again? Maghihintay ba ng 2 weeks or 1 week? Kasi with the Delta variant na ang reproduction number ay 5 to 8, and then mabilis talaga siya. Should we wait for 2 weeks and then revert back to something that is rigid? Kasi ang hirap eh.
Okay.
So those are the upwards, nasagot ko na, Christian. My main question is the threshold, kung we have to wait for 2 weeks.
Pasagot natin kay Undersecretary Vega. Do you have any threshold for you to reconsider what to do after this?
Alam mo, right now, Christian, if you take a look at the general scenario in terms of the utilization of the allocated COVID beds right now, the HCUR is almost in the threshold of high risk, and the, especially the intensive care units right now is in the high risk position. And the main reason for this is that although NCR really has about 5,000 to 6,000 new cases per day, but we have seen a number of calls coming from Region 3 and Region 4A. And this was unlike before, wherein we can easily coordinate transfers from the NCR to the other regions. But this time it's moving towards the NCR. So my threshold for this is that if the GCQ would mean that there is an escalation by 15% to 20% in the next few days, I think we should be ready to adopt a certain rigid kind of quarantine position to make sure that we will be able to address this. But the feel is if there is going to be a very intensified kind of test, trace, and isolate these active cases, and probably do a stricter granular lockdown. I think by doing this, we can easily move towards a decrease in the next few days. I hope so, that once the interventions are there.
Okay, do I get it to mean, just to clarify things, Undersecretary, we don't need to wait until the end of the month to reconsider what to do. If it's week or two, the threshold, let's say, is met, for instance, we should go, but we should be ready to reconsider stricter lockdowns, or perhaps better yet, relax kung talaga mag-improve.
Yeah, right. I think we can enforce at once a rigid kind of a quarantine position, or extend more areas for a granular lockdown, whichever it is, as long as we need to react if there is an increasing trend in the next few days.
Okay. Before I go to the other topics, gusto ko muna pag-usapan itong daily COVID-19 bulletin coming from the DOH. Itong pag-usap itanong to kay Secretary Vega, and I hope Dr. Tony can also weigh in on this. We can show this this image on the screen. So every day nakikita natin to, no? Inaabangan natin to every afternoon. Marami nagtatanong dito sa Undersecretary Vega. Bakit daw medyo maliit yata yung font ng new cases? Tapos mataas yung percentage of active cases, for instance. I mean, is this intentional on the part of DOH to somehow to suppress the bad news and to somehow highlight the positive aspects of the reporting?
I'm sorry, Christian, but I never noticed that too. So I don't know if there was an intention towards it, but since you mentioned it to me, this is the first time that I got conscious of what you're saying.
Napansin niyo rin ba yun, Dr. Tony? Marami nagtatanong ito on social media, by the way.
Napansin ko nga yun, maliit yung new cases at saka yung total number of cases. Tapos maliit yung deaths. Ang malaki actually yung positivity rate on the left and the testing. Yan ang very obvious. Kaya ako, as I look at the 4 PM bulletin always, hindi ko na pinapansin yung number of cases kasi alam ko dynamic yan. At saka mayroong laboratories na hindi nagsasubmit. Alam mo, what is important to me is the positivity rate. Kasi pag ang positivity rate mataas, I know na yung cases na yan, meron niyang increase pa.
So
lagi yun ang binabantayan ko talaga is actually the positivity rate and the testing. Kasi that will determine sa akin yung number of cases. At actually, ang makakatulong for USEC Bong Vega is actually si Secretary Vince Dizon. Kasi kanina pinost ko lang sa Twitter kanina. To solve the downstream cases, we call it the downstream cases. Yung pag na-hospital ka, we call it downstream. Ang prevention, ang tawag namin yan upstream. So in order to reduce the number of admissions, you have to decrease the number of cases. And the number of cases actually is anchored on a decreased positivity rate and the increase in the number of testing. And therefore, you will be able to help USEC Bong Vega to manage the hospitalization kung walang ma-admit, and then put a relief on the healthcare workers na humihingi ng time out. And at the same time, reduce the number of deaths. Kasi for August, and thanks for Edson Guido for the analytics. Do you know that 400,000 cases were recorded in August? And that is 20% to the 2 million. And then there were 5,500 deaths recorded also for the month of August. And the cases were also, in terms of the active cases, not doubled din. So main concern ko in a Delta variant situation, ang projection ng Okta is 30,000 by the end of the month. Eh. Mm. So ang iniisip ko to, in order to help Yusef Wong Vega, dapat mag-double time si Secretary Vince Tison to do the testings na ang pinaproject ng mga experts around 100,000 to 150 so that you decrease the positivity rate, decrease the number of cases, decrease the admissions, decrease the deaths, and decrease the ICU capacity. So actually, malaking tulong talaga yung preventive side, which is the upstream, in order to decrease the downstream cases.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break. After the fact, we'll be right back. Welcome back to After the Facts. Still with us is Undersecretary Leopoldo Vega and Dr. Tony Lechon. Okay, before I ask the next question kay Undersecretary Vega, I'd like to read a comment from one of our viewers. I think this is directed to you. When you talked about the threshold, no? We don't have to wait until the end of the month to actually reconsider the strategies. Sabi niya, meaning at this point, the government can do more yet has not done enough. And but even that is a number reached by averaging out, which gives a mere general picture. Anyway, so baka naman one of our viewers is thinking this way. Now, Undersecretary Vega, of course, we saw the numbers for today. No? Mataas yung positivity rate. I think nasa 28.8%. Okay, mataas talaga siya. And then we recorded, as you mentioned, the highest single day tally for today. And I know that there are also antigen tests conducted in others. No? So pag inisip natin, this is much more. No? Mas marami pang positive cases than what is reported. Is that correct?
Yeah, right. First of all, I'd like to view that what Tony was saying kanina, the positivity rate, I think that's very true, that we need to increase more testing and so that we will be able to do the proper surveillance for an active new case findings. And all. And the only way that you can do that is to really test more. And then the question on you were saying that for well, your question only
they sabi ng viewer natin, government can do more, it seems, pero it's not doing enough.
Yeah, but you know, we've been trying to make sure that there are proper in terms of testing and tracing and isolation. We believe that in testing alone, although 75,000 is not enough, we really have to test more. And that's a fact that we should always consider. And then the second is that the contact tracing that we have, which is really more LGU dependent, and it's not actually digitally in a digital platform that makes it harder for even the contact tracers to look for these active new cases that they have, especially for those in contact with COVID patients.
Okay. Speaking of testing, ito lang. Ano ba talaga yung reason, Undersecretary Vega, why until now we haven't tested enough daily? Kasi we've been hearing that since last year, what needed to be done. And even today, di ba, pinag-uusapan natin, we need to test more. Pero yes. Bakit ba hindi ma-achieve, let's say, yung goal na 100,000 tests per day?
Kasi alam mo, Cristiano, when we started off with this testing, last year, we only have about 4 or 5 PCR machines and capable laboratories to do that. And we were able now to expand it to about 290 PCR tests, PCR lab, molecular laboratory. And I guess from this point of view, you can see that there has been a tremendous increase in the testing to about 70,000. But of course, they have been maximally doing this because of varied reasons. One of the reasons oftentimes is that there is a delay in terms of the testing equipment or the testing reagents that are needed, especially with the government. And second, there is also areas, especially in some regions in Mindanao and Visayas, where the main molecular laboratory is in the region, and it has to be the samples have to be transferred and traveled. No? So in other words, there are still more molecular labs that's going to be accredited and finalized and become operational. So by this by that time, I probably it will create more testing as compared with last year. We were just groping with almost 20,000, but we're now averaging about 70 to 75,000.
Okay, Dr. Tony, when you were still with the NTF, what were the gaps that you saw in terms of testing? Kasi nga, it could be very, very frustrating for people watching. Na they've been hearing about it since last year. And we understand the predicament of our government. Pero where do you attribute this failure to meet that target? Let's say 100,000 tests per day. Sabi ni Undersecretary Vega, yung kulang din ang labs, diba? Tsaka, syempre, overwork yung mga tao. Pero, did you see any problem with funding, planning, or certain policy decisions on the part of government that perhaps were lacking?
Well, Christian, ang nakita ko at that time, there were decreased number of molecular labs. More concentrated in the NCR. In fact, right now, of course, Yusek Bombega will confirm that based on my readings, mga 50% of the RT-PCR labs are actually in the National Capital Region. And ang problem natin, the farther you are from the NCR, the lesser is the RT-PCR. So the turnaround is actually low. Kaya ang problema nun, some of our doctors would only treat pagka nandyan yung RT-PCR rate. So the main problem sa nakita ko, Christian, is actually the infrastructure for the RT-PCR molecular lab. So, naisip ko naman is to be innovative by reading sa US, they consider yung rapid antigen test, which is from the Harvard Medical School, si Dr. Michael Mina. Sinusundan ko siya lagi eh. So, if you don't have the infrastructure for the RT-PCR, then you can use the rapid antigen as a surrogate test. At kung, of course, you could correlate it eh, para malaman. And then, ang nire-request ko is for the technical advisors of Department of Health to make an algorithm para mas maintindihan ng tao. Now, of course, the gold standard is the RT-PCR. But in the absence of the RT-PCR, eh, ginagawa ko sa bahay to sa mga bata kasi I have two doctors here. Nagagawa nila so that if my kids are actually from the hospital, you can be assured na at least okay ka. The other one is... if I may, no, as a suggestion lang, is the syndrome. Merong study, Yusek Bong, no, from UK, na if you have these five symptoms, you might actually have a Delta variant. So ang ginagawa ko ngayon, dahil limited yung pera ng mga tao, if you have fever, headache, sore throat, persistent cough, and wala namang ibang magbibigay nito, plus anosmia and of course the sense of taste, ito ay COVID kaagad. So I start treating them at the way syndrome-based. Mm. So that kasi pag late kasi intervention mo, ang mangyayari, late Kumalat din na. Ang... Oo. Ngayon itong concern natin na pwede nating sabihin kay Yusek Bombega to help out reduce the number of admissions. Yung telemedicine kasi natin, hindi siya nationwide na may infrastructure. Ang alam ko merong solid niyan, of course Department of Health, meron ka sa PGH, and of course some LGUs eh. And I think mang malaking tulong dito is kung magkaroon ng telemedicine para sa ganun, mag-guide ang mga tao right now kahit wala ka pang RT-PCR, and then maximize the rapid antigen test kasi 30 minutes lang para pregnancy test, uh-huh, you'll be able to address this. And then combine with the symptoms. Sana yun ang algorithm. Oh, and then mobilize all the doctors to help out. No? So that's one thing na gusto natin siguro.
Okay. May isa pa ako gusto itanong sa inyo pareho. No? Pero I'd like Yusek Vega, of course Dr. Vega, to respond to this first. There was an interesting comment coming from Manila Mayor Isko Moreno regarding face shield. Sabi niya, dapat mas bumili tayo ng ano, toxilizumab tsaka remdesivir, yung mga antiviral viral kesa dun sa face shields. I mean, isn't this a logical suggestion that the government should do?
Well, Tony, yeah.
Ako muna
sasagot. Go ahead, Tony.
Sige.
Ako kasi downstream kasi siya. Sorry, Mayor Isko, minsan advisor ako ni Mayor Isko on that. Kasi if we order the remdesivir and the toxi, parang we're promoting the downstream. Ako, I would rather prevent it. Ako, you put your money where your mouth is. Eh? So, ang suggestion ko is to invest more on testing. Sa akin, ah, sa aking palagay. Ah.
Testing ang focus.
Testing ang focus. Kasi
pero, contact tracing. Pero marami ng pasyente ngayon. Eh. Di ba kailangan na rin nila ng gamot?
Yeah, I understand. Pero pag walang ma-admit sa hospital, eh wala kang kailangan ng remdesivir or toxi. Yun yun eh. So ngayon, if you will, though I know sabay ito eh, na punong hospital and then may remdi ka tsaka toxi na wala ka. Pero imaginein mo, if you decrease the upstream cases, wala kang downstream cases. Okay. Ngayon, let's answer the face shield. In fairness naman to the government, meron naman study ang Lancet on the face shield eh. The 78% reduction. And then we combine that with face masks and social distancing, it could come up to a 99% reduction. We study po yan na June Lancet. Eh. But because walang gumagawa sa buong mundo, it doesn't mean it is not correct. And it's still an extra layer of protection. So napag-initan yung face shield dahil walang gumagawa sa buong mundo. So in fairness to the government, merong study for that. To. Okay. Ang ginagawa lang sa CDC, double masking lang sila, wala silang face shield.
Okay. Okay. Undersecretary Vega.
Yeah, you're right. Face shields is part really of prevention. And the remdesivir and tocilizumab, these are the therapeutic ones. And I guess, as Tony was saying, I'd rather invest in prevention at this time of the game because a face shield or a double masking will really improve your protection and, of course, prevent the transmission on a preventive aspect. It's not pharmaceutical, but it's very important.
Okay. Speaking of face shields, malaking controversy regarding the purchase of face shields and other medical supplies. Don't you think, Undersecretary Vega, this affected very negatively the credibility of the Department of Health in its pandemic response? You guys are supposed to be leading this pandemic response, but on the other hand, there's a lot of suspicion that there's corruption. We're talking of big money here.
You're right.
How much of your credibility has been affected by this? Especially with allegations like, baka naman kaya na-require ng government ng face shield para kumita itong mga negosyante o politiko na to.
Now, Christian, you should understand that when we started off with this face shield, it was not the face shield that the general population was using. I mean, at the start of the pandemic, what was being ordered was the medical-grade face shields. And this is really for the high-risk healthcare workers who are in the operating room, intensive care units. And so these medical-grade face shields and even the PPEs were much more different from the face shields that we're using today, because you cannot use this ordinary face shield inside an ICU. Also, definitely, that's the distinction. So I guess people should understand that there are so many levels of risk inside an hospital, and even using different kinds of PPEs. Like if I were in level one, low risk area in the hospital, you'd just be given something like an OR gown, which is really very disposable and it can be torn off. But if you are in a higher level of risk, say in an ICU, that definitely the PPE that you'll be using is totally different and which is now non-permeable to any kind of substances. So that's okay. That's what it should be understood, that not all PPEs are all the same.
Okay. Now regarding the transferred fund, the transferred allocation to the procurement service of the DBM, 42 billion pesos now for the purchase of these medical supplies related to the COVID pandemic response. Looking back, do you think the DOH should have done the purchase itself?
Right. You know, when the pandemic came, and I got to talk to people in the procurement, especially in the Department of Health, the pandemic, and it was really a whole of government approach. Every agency should be involved in this. And the Department of Health is also doing its natural procurement in terms of its operations, like immunization and the different preventive and control measures or programs under the Department of Health. An added procurement wherein the scale is too much, the Department of Health doesn't have the number of teams for this very specialized procurement. And this is the reason why, as a whole of government approach, the PSDBM, really, which has been tasked us ever since to do the procurement, even specialized procurements, that they were given the instructions that they must be able to do this for the Department of Health so that it would be easier for the department since we were on the response side. We were okay. looking, making sure that but the infrastructure and the healthcare workers are there to combat the pandemic.
Okay. Before I go to Dr. Tony, gusto ko munang tanongin kay Dito sa part na to. Pero looking at the way the contract was crafted and was granted to a single company, we're talking here of 8.7 billion. That's of course the controversy that erupted afterward. Hindi mo mas maganda na as a USEC, are you now thinking na dapat yata kami na lang bumili nito para mas maayos, mas pulido, mas malinis?
Yes, we can. But you know, in a certain situation wherein you know it is a pandemic. And the response, the lead agency for the response is the Department of Health. And we have to take care of the biosurveillance, epidemiology, and even the treatment side, and even the isolation. I think it would be much better if it would be given to another team inside the government, which is really a government-to-government kind of intervention, of placing this contract or this number of procurement to the PSDBM, which has been there and tasked to do specialized procurement.
Okay. Finally, Dr. Tony, your thoughts on this. The fact that the department is also dealing with this big controversy, how much of its credibility you think has been affected, if not eroded, by questions regarding the choices made when it came to the contracts and the huge money involved?
Well, Christian, I mean, res ipsa loquitur. When I saw the video of Secretary Duque on the Warak video, sorry, Yusek Bombega about it.
And sorry, okay, Don. Okay.
Yeah, and there was also a video where Secretary Duque also mentioned to Secretary Gordon. Narinig yun eh, Bong eh. Na tinatanong ka, no? Medyo nalito ako, no? So yung ganun kasi, it erodes the trust and credibility of the Department of Health at the time that the leadership, particularly of Secretary Duque at IATF and also the DOH, will be needed strongly. And then by admission that parang Warak, it's a lingo na sinasabi. So parang naisip ng mga tao, if the number one leader in the country in terms of the pandemic response, the mental toughness is not there. And then you're being questioned by the COA on the 67 deficiency funds. And ang laking dagok yun eh. Kasi it's all over eh. Pero alam mo, once na na-clear si Secretary Duque dito and the Department of Health at naayos lahat to, I think there's a hearing tomorrow at the Senate at na-clear out din. Alam mo naman yan eh, ang shelf life ng news eh, 2 weeks lang eh. And then you have to move forward and roll with the punches eh. I mean, that's the way it is. Mas marami tayong crisis na pinagdaanan eh. And experience ko, being in media communications, pag natapos yan, at maayos naman ang performance ng Department of Health 8 months to go, I think they can rekindle and of course, claim back that particular trust and credibility. But, you know, it has to be answered by tomorrow. Okay. And so that moving forward, the DOH can function very well up to the May 2022 term of the president.
Okay. Dr. Tony Lechon and Undersecretary Leopoldo Vega, thank you for joining us this evening, gentlemen.
Thank you, Christian.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you. Salamat. Salamat for
maraming salamat.
See you around. All right. Okay.
Salamat. And before we go, the Philippines' new single-day tally record stunned social media users. For one netizen, the record-breaking number is a manifestation of the country's poor pandemic response. Some can't help but question the government's recent move to ease some restrictions despite the steady rise in cases. And others say they might just have to rely on their immune system and guardian angel as the situation worsens. So that's it for this episode. This has been your host, Christian Esguera. You can watch this episode again on iWantTFC or listen to our podcast on Spotify. Now for recaps and other exclusive content, subscribe to the ANC YouTube channel and catch up with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. See you again tomorrow after the fact.